You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the show for this week. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Well, it's finally happened. Something we all thought would be a long time coming. And in a way, it has been. No fanfare, no advertising campaign, no extravagant launch. Last week, Australia's incumbent telco, Telstra, turned on ADSL2 in over 900 exchanges across the country. Until now, Sol has only allowed Telstra to sell the ADSL2 product in exchanges that its competitors have had the same technology. So why the change of heart? The announcement was made in Canberra last Wednesday by Telstra boss Sol Trujillo with Kevin Rudd and Stephen Conroy. According to the press release, ADSL2 is now going to be turned on in 900 exchanges because the government gave Telstra an assurance that it would not regulate third-party access to the service. Telstra has been seeking this assurance for over a year. Now, some history is required here. The ACCC has stated time and time again that ADSL2 services are unregulated and should stay that way. Also, the ACCC has legislative powers to regulate this service if it desires, and the federal government can give no guarantee that it will not be regulated. So what's going on here then? Why, all of a sudden, has Telstra turned on ADSL2 Plus when it's dug its heels in for so long? It just doesn't add up. Are Rudd and Conroy doing backroom deals? Don't get me wrong, it is great news for all Australians, but the cynics are asking, what's the catch?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
YouTube is going to profit split advertising revenue with top content generators. Rural New South Wales Vodafone users stuck without mobile services for almost a week. Mobiles and cancer are back in the news again. More on the Microsoft $44 billion offer for Yahoo. And the price of the Xbox 360 heads south in a big way. First up, what's been happening in the world of technology this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
Tonight on Tech Talk News, Telstra turns on ADSL2 Plus in 900 exchanges across the country. Ousted Senator Helen Coonan weighs in on the Telstra ADSL2 Plus debate. Ex-Woolies IT execs on fraud charges and Google selling more email security. This is Tech Talk News. First up though, British chip designer ARM will show a prototype mobile phone based on Google's Android platform next Monday at the Mobile World Congress Wireless Show in Barcelona. Deutsche Telekom's T-Mobile and Taiwan's Hi-Tech Computer have said that they plan to offer phones based on the open-source Android software platform this year. Internet search leader Google may upset the wireless industry with its software system design to make the web as smoothly accessible from mobile devices as from PCs, challenging Nokia, Microsoft and Apple. It is also bidding for wireless spectrum in the United States in a move that pits it against the entrenched carriers like AT&T and Verizon Wireless. Its operator partners in the Open Handset Alliance announced in November include China Mobile, NTT Docomo, KDDI and Telefonica, which have all said they are working with handset makers to develop Google-based phones. Research firm Strategy Analytics has estimated that Android will be in 2% of smartphones this year. Telstra has given its ADSL services in 900 telephone exchanges a speed boost long sought by its wholesale internet customers. The carrier said it would progressively switch on ADSL2 Plus across the exchanges over the next 7 months, making the service available to around 2.4 million consumers via its network for the first time.
The move will boost maximum theoretical broadband speeds available from the exchanges from 8 megabits per second to 20 megabits per second. However, until now, the carrier has only been willing to make ADSL 2 Plus available from exchanges where it was being offered by its competitors, including iiNet, Primus, and Internode. Telstra has resisted pressure to turn on the technology, citing concerns that Australia's competition regulator would attempt to set wholesale pricing for the service. Telstra said that the government had made it clear it did not consider a compelling case had been made for the regulatory third-party access to the service. Telstra's Jeff Booth.
Well, now homes and small businesses in regional Australia will be able to access the internet at very high speeds, and there's going to be great benefits for our small businesses in regional Australia and great benefits for not only education and health applications but also entertainment for people at home.
David Foreman, chairman of the Competition Carriers Coalition, said Telstra was attempting to undermine support for arguments the carrier's network operations should be split from its retail businesses. The CCC said that the federal government had merely repeated advice the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has already given to Telstra during the last 18 to 24 months. And former Communications Minister Helen Coonan's bitter war of words with Telstra is raging on, even though she's no longer in government. Senator Coonan, who as a minister had a toxic relationship with Telstra, attacked the telco in a letter to a newspaper, despite having lost responsibility for the communications portfolio when the coalition was forced into opposition. Senator Coonan accused Telstra of backflipping with its announcement last week it would activate high-speed ADSL 2 Plus broadband at more than 900 exchanges. She told the Financial Review that the pity is that these Telstra exchanges could have been activated more than 18 months ago. Senator Coonan also said she offered Telstra a letter of comfort, telling it faced no regulatory risk. But Telstra, she claimed, refused to activate the broadband services unless it was given an unfettered right to build a fibre-to-the-node network. A former senior technology executive of Woolworths has been charged with 9 counts of fraud after allegedly swindling almost $4 million from the retailing giant over several years. The Nine Network reported last week that police alleged that while he was handling a $130 million scanning systems project involving an American and an Israeli company, fraudulent activities were in play. The 57-year-old allegedly took more than $3.7 million worth of kickbacks after awarding contracts worth $37 million. The executive, who worked at Woolworths for 9 years until he left in 1999, was arrested last Thursday at his home in Castle Hill, in Sydney's northwest, following an 8-year police investigation. A Woolworths spokeswoman defended the company's internal anti-fraud practices and said the police investigation, which was carried out at the request of the company, had been thorough. The accused had regularly travelled overseas in his role representing one or a combination of Woolworths-operated businesses including Big W, Dick Smith Electronics, Dan Murphy's and BWS. The man was granted bail and will appear in a Parramatta local court on March the 6th. And finally this week, global marketing research company IDC has sounded a wake-up call to Australian telcos, warning Google is adding more email security and storage products for its businesses, sharpening its aim on a Microsoft stronghold, while the competition between the two rivals also heats up in internet search and advertising. The tools introduced last week build upon technology that Google acquired last year when it bought email specialist Postini for $625 million. The package of products are designed to weed out junk mail and potential viruses, as well as protect against leaks for confidential information sent through email. Google is also offering to retain email data for longer periods. All the latest features are compatible with Microsoft Exchange, as well as Lotus Notes and Novell GroupWise. Prices will range from $3 per user to $25 a user, depending on how much protection and data retention a customer wants. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Macworld 2008. There's a big patch, 10.5.1, that came out that fixed a lot of bugs.
Yeah. If you've got the wrong SIM card, if you've got the wrong thing, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
You can't train people to sell the right thing if the right thing isn't available.
Yeah, they don't want scum like me in this show.
I think this discussion needs to be held off air.
Conroy said that they've got to give free upgrades to people who don't have the right phones.
Look, it's good in theory, but in practice, well, I don't think they're hearing that out there in the bush.
Well, I don't understand it, but I believe you.
I don't understand, but you can see it, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lovely photo of Sol on his knees with a liney out in the field.
The thing defies logic in respect to its physical size.
Yeah, we won't go there, but yes.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
I know, and it works really well.
You send an email, yes, and an email comes back that says, who the hell are you and what do you want? This is why you don't outsource essential infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Now, I think what's going on there...
You've got a Faraday shield in your kitchen, have you?
I don't know, but I'm not happy.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across from me today on the panel, Graham Callaghan, and our very special, much nicer looking Dr. Ron. Justin Dunlop joins us again to say, well, tell us all about Max and everything else. He's going to be a panelist for the next little bit. So, Justin, g'day. How are you? Thanks for coming in and filling the very big shoes of Dr.
Huge
Ron.
Shoes. Thanks, Andrew. Hi, Graham. Lots of news on the Apple front, actually, so it'll be good.
We can talk about that. Dr. Graham, how's life? What's happening? Anything exciting? You'd be busy because Vista's doing all sorts of things at the moment too. So
yeah,
from both camps, Microsoft and Apple.
I'm actually anxiously awaiting my my update disc to get the Vista Service Pack 1 and see how it goes. The talk around the shop, though, is not entirely encouraging, I'd have to say.
What do you mean?
A lot of people are saying that... Service Pack 1 for Vista, which has just come out, is not doing wonders for Vista's speed, which is what Microsoft said it should do. But, apparently it's still a bit slow and not getting any better.
Do you know many customers, or do you have many customers, or do you know many people using Vista?
Not a great deal. We have a very small number, notably because they've bought it on laptops that they've bought from retail outlets and they haven't quite...
I'm in that boat. Well, put it this way, my wife uses Vista and she uses two programs, a mail client and a word processor. So apart from that, it works fine.
Yeah, well, on a simple system and on a system that's got a halfway decent processor and a ton of RAM, it'll run okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to run it on a system that's got less than a gig of RAM.
Yeah.
And it only really works well on the latest sort of dual core type processors.
Ah, yes. Very good. Yeah, well, no, this is on a little Acer. Once again, bought by a laptop from the local computer shoppy type down thing down the road. And for all intents and purposes, it does actually run exceptionally well. So, yes, I think persistence is everything with Vista, because a lot of people do are very sluggish. Or even still, all my work machines still run on XP.
Yeah, Vista still feels a bit strange to those of us who've got very used to the way XP comes together.
And the thing that goes in the back of my mind is that Mac ad. Have you seen the Mac ad?
Yes, with the security guard, yes.
Yeah.
You're coming to a sad realisation.
Anyway, speaking of Macs, apart from the fact that Adam Turner actually... uses one and is a little disappointed the Shoutcast stream isn't there for technical reasons this evening. So hello to everyone listening to us on the Windows Media Stream, including Mike in Western Australia. G'day, Mike. Got an email from him before. It must be about it's a few hours difference between us and them at the moment. I'm just trying to scroll back down and find his email here, but he was referring to Dr. Ron. Scroll down. Oh, this is very professional. Hey, fellas, just letting you know, you at least have one listener in Western Australia listening on the stream, already online. That's very keen, Mike. And that was
before we'd even started the show.
That was about 45 minutes ago.
There you go.
I don't know what you've been listening to, but it's probably been great. So, g'day, Mike. And he's been listening to Dr. Ron on ABC Radio, as you do. Yes, he sort of serenades us all on telling us all about grammar and likes. And, Mike was just letting us know that he had a listen there. So,
okay.
Dr. Ron is absent tonight, of course. I asked you last week to send the email. Graham, didn't you send him an email?
No.
We have changed studios. Do you think he's no?
He's probably showing up at the old studio, is he?
That could be. What it is? Oh, well, look, anything's possible. Another interesting bit of feedback from last week. We were talking about the new AirBook or the Air thing from Mac. And Adam sent across a follow-up email the other day saying, yes, it is true, the battery life does suck. And I have had another bit of feedback too. We spoke last week that the battery is an iPhone battery. That is, it soldered in. I've heard contrary to that in the weeks preceding. I don't know whether you know, Justin, about the batteries in the new the new ultra really thin.
My understanding
devices.
Is that they can't be user replaced, but you can get them replaced at a service center. So if you're a professional and you need to swap batteries in and out to go for hours and hours and hours on a plane, that isn't going to happen for you.
We can't use them on a plane anyway because you haven't got a DVD in there or no optical drive, so you can't watch your movies.
Yes, you can.
Well, not unless you copy them on or hijack the PC in front of you. Excuse me, buddy. Can you just run this bit of software in the seat in front of you?
That's right.
I want your hard drive. I want your optical drive.
But you're limited to the battery that's in there, and you can get it replaced when it dies.
Good, because in real-world tests, on the Mac site, they're claiming a 5 and a bit hours or 5.5 hours or something like that. And real-world tests, as everyone's starting to put up on the web, is around about 2 hours, which... Because batteries, and they have to be chunky. They have to be big for capacity, and I think you're kidding yourself if... You don't think it's that way. We have a newsletter, the Tech Talk Radio newsletter, and thank you to all the new people who have signed up for it. Visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. On the right-hand side, about halfway down, you'll see it. Just click through there and sign up, and we'll send you. We'll spam you. No, we won't. We'll just send you an email and tell you what's on the show tonight. And there's lots on the show tonight, as we've alluded to in the opening. So I guess we should get onwards and upwards. But first, on to big news this week, ADSL 2. Telstra has decided that it's going to open up all of its high-speed exchanges in the next few months.
Yeah, about bloody time too.
Well, yes, you might say that. And the reason
I didn't say that.
The reason why is still beyond... I don't know why.
No.
If anyone can tell us why, cynics are us. That's us probably too. I can't speak for Justin here, but cynical is where we come from.
Mm.
Why they didn't do this earlier, I don't know.
There must have been some technical reason, surely, Andrew.
All the equipment's been in the exchanges for months and months and months and months.
Basically, what this means is that in 900 exchanges around the countryside, they're going to turn on ADSL 2+. Now, you've got to remember that you've got to live relatively close to a telephone exchange to enjoy the speeds that ADSL 2 delivers.
And in fact, if you look at the way the speed, the connection speed versus the distance from the exchange works... unless you're really close to the exchange, you really won't get a speed that's much different from ADSL 1 anyway, because as you get further from the exchange, the speeds tend to merge together, to get closer together. So
yeah.
You only get any advantage if you're within a kilometre and a half or so of the exchange.
Yeah, and up to 1.5, they'll give you good speeds. But beyond that, Jeff Booth is a man from Telstra.
Oh, yes.
He had a few things to say. I'm going to play it to you right now. I might also add that these grabs came from the Telstra website.
Well, now homes and small businesses in regional Australia will be able to access the internet at very high speeds, and there's going to be great benefits for our small businesses in regional Australia and great benefits for not only education and health applications but also entertainment for people at home. We're upgrading more than 900 exchanges with high-speed broadband, and the great news for regional Australians is that 80% of these exchange upgrades are happening outside of the major cities.
Yeah, Jeff. 1.5 kilometres for regional people from the exchange, and then they get what we get in the city. A bit misleading there, I feel. Let's hope this Opel consortium can do something decent for the people that are a little bit rurally 1.5 kilometres beyond the exchange, because it would be, I think we all need the internet these days. It would be a very important tool, I think, in a lot of people's, especially the farmers, for
weather.
Well, that's
right. You've got to bear in mind that people
shopping and stuff.
Yeah, people out there trying, they're not, they're not just feeding cows. They're trying to run a business, a 21st century business. And things like being able to get the test results. The customers that I work with with my work, we work with some farmers that produce milk. And it's absolutely critical to their business to get the test results off for the protein content in the milk, because that's what they get paid on, and those test results come back over the internet. So
I'm learning lots tonight on TikTok.
That sort of stuff, you wouldn't realise that's how critical that can be to somebody trying to run a business.
Conroy was on doing the media circuit across the course of the weekend. He had a few interesting things to say. I guess one of them was the fact that he was reinforcing what everyone else has been saying all along, and that is that the federal government has no power to regulate. It's really up to the ACCC. And what he says, because he sent Sol an email or a letter sort of reiterating the deal, like, he's not going to regulate. He just said that. It was just a letter. He said, we can't do that anyway, but all of a sudden they've decided to do it. Here's what Mr. Conroy had to say.
Under law, I have no role. Any decision that I would purportedly make would actually hold no standing in law. This is a matter for the ACCC, as I explained in my letter. And in all my public statements, I've made it very clear that this is properly the matter for the ACCC. But on the basis of the public statements and the conversations that I had with the ACCC, I was happy to write to Telstra. And if that gave them the comfort to be able to switch on 900 exchanges that reached 2.4 million households, then this was a win-win. And if the relationship between Telstra and the previous government wasn't as good as it could be, well, Telstra have drawn a line in the sand and they want to move forward on a positive agenda about delivering genuine high-speed broadband to Australians.
Yes. Yes, drawn a line in the sand, but at least it's positive. And as I said in the opening, it's really, really good for all Australians. Now, we've just got to talk about speed for a little bit. You know, ADSL2 is, what, 20 megabits per second if you're very, very close to the exchange, like maybe 800 metres or something, the office used to be?
What they technically say is up to 24 megabits per second. But yes, obviously, you only get that if you're right next door to the exchange, you might get 22 or 20, yeah?
Yeah, so, and you've got to mention that the government's benchmark is at least 12 megabits per second, if not, I think 20 megabits is the rate that they're actually talking about. And once again, Mr. Conroy was quite interested in telling us all about the speeds and just what he had in plan.
We're talking about delivering a minimum of 12 megs. What ADSL 2 Plus delivers is an up to speed, up to 20. The average is considerably lower, and the average is affected by the distance from the exchange. ADSL 2 Plus is a component of Labor's fibre network, but it isn't sufficient to reach 98% of Australians' homes and businesses with a minimum. And that's the key here really is the word minimum. When you talk about ADSL 2 Plus, great technology if you live within 1.5 kilometres of an exchange. And that's the key difference with fibre. What we do with fibre is we take fibre into the streets. So the point at which you have to start using the copper is vastly reduced. So those properties of the laws of physics apply much closer to people's homes than they do from exchanges. And that's why it's important and critical, in fact, to get a fibre network in the ground here in Australia. There's a number of consortiums talking to us about fibre to the home, and I've been engaged in a number of discussions. Our specs that we'll be releasing in the next couple of weeks will allow the possibility of a consortium to put forward. Now, whether they can build the business case, that's a matter for the consortium. What we have said is that we won't contribute more than $4.7 billion, whether it's a fibre to the node or fibre to the home proposal.
Mm, them's bait. I'm wondering if that was also in the letter that went to Sol. So there you have it. There's some interesting information there, but I must admit there was words came out of the Senator's mouth that I've never heard come out of Senator Helen Coonan's mouth, and that was about science.
Yes.
All right, one other interesting bit of information before we take a break. Lydia Davis, our correspondent in California, who will get on the radio one of these days, Lyd.
That'd be nice to hear her voice on the air again.
Yes, it will. She sent across an interesting thing, stopbadware.org, the Netwood Watch campaign aimed at fighting badware. Now, this is nasty software and all that. Now, I reckon this will raise your hackles, Graham. A Stop Badware investigation found that RealPlayer 10.5 is considered to be badware because it fails to disclose the advertising features of the software, which are embedded by default for users who elect to exit the RealPlayer registration process.
Yes, I agree totally.
Yes. So if you're installing, I hate RealPlayer with a passion. I've always thought it to be something that it isn't. And this just confirms that thought.
Yes, it does its basic job, but they've added on these extra bits of what some people call foistware, these things that get added on in order for you to get the basic thing. You get the other things added to it, like this advertising thing, this little annoying thing that pops up at the bottom and keeps telling you something or other.
Yes, but if you choose not to register, which is what I would do.
Yep.
Because I just wanted to hear something that I can't get in another format.
That's right.
If I choose not to register, then they're going to put this spyware. Well, whatever it is. Foistware, as you call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. RealPlayer 11 is considered to be badware because it does not disclose that it will install a Rhapsody Player Engine, whatever that is, because the relationship between Rhapsody Player Engine and RealPlayer or Real Networks is not disclosed. And because the Rhapsody Player Engine software is removed or identified when RealPlayer is uninstalled. So there you go.
Yes. Now, if I can just add a little bit of fuel to this fire.
Off you go, get the Kero out.
I reckon that Adobe, with their what used to be called Acrobat Reader, and their Flash Player and their Shockwave Player, are walking a very fine line of ending up on lists like that themselves, with trying to foist toolbars in particular.
Oh, you mean the Google toolbar and stuff like that that comes up?
And other things like that on people who are wanting to download and install, say, Flash Player or Acrobat Reader. Mm. I think that it's bundled in with the installer and you've got to untick the box. You've got to notice that the box is there and untick it and be confident enough that it's not something that you're going to need. Otherwise, you get this extra toolbar that you don't need and you didn't want. So I reckon that...
And it clutters your computer up and it slows it down and it sends things you don't want it to send. It
takes up your display space. You know, there's less space for the web page if you've got half a dozen toolbars. Google toolbar, Yahoo toolbar, MSN toolbar. I've seen customers who've got these all three toolbars on their thing and they say, no, I didn't install any of them. They just appeared there.
But they have lots of choice.
Yes.
If they're like people at our place, they click first and ask questions later. Where'd that come from?
Yep. So I think that a lot of... And it's not just Adobe that do it. I've just singled them out. But yes, they want to tread carefully to avoid being listed on these sorts of sites for that reason.
Can't agree with you more there, Dr. Graham. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan, Andrew McComb here this evening. Dr. Ron, somewhere out in cyberspace. We will be hearing from him in spirit sometime shortly down the end of the show. He might even call in. You never know, you're like... But nonetheless, we'll take a break. When we come back, Adam Turner's going to tell us all about the land of digital television, which is his digital lounge room, really. Facebook spam. This is Dr. Ron. Now, what's going on here?
They said that, yeah. But no one's recorded where that user is.
Well, we don't know that, Graham.
No.
Oh. You're an anomaly. You're a statistical blip.
Yeah, but they're all city-centric deals, too.
What the worry is, though, it's not always as obvious as that.
Watch this space, wait, see.
The sinister bit is that they've been collecting all this data.
What the hell are they talking about?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, that you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, everybody. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron is not here this evening. He's out there somewhere. Graham is here, though, and so is Justin Dunlop. And we're going to talk now about one of my pet hates, digital television.
You don't like digital television?
I love it.
No, I do. Don't get
Good
me wrong.
For the kids.
I love the transmission technologies of digital television. I just don't like what the networks do to it.
I like the nice, clean, sharp picture.
You're obviously not watching ABC 2.
Well, and I like the fact that on the main ABC channel, you don't get those two rows of little dots across it.
What?
From where the power line
the
interference
noise
gets on the picture.
Yes, because the ABC, in the major cities, is at a very low frequency.
And it is.
If you've got noisy or big power lines out the front of your house, chances are you get to see funny little white lines go across the screen.
Which I find very annoying, so you don't get that on the digital TV.
No, you don't.
But when somebody opens the fridge or next door's air conditioner turns on or whatever it is, and where on the analog TV it would just go click and you wouldn't miss anything, the digital TV kind of drops sync for a second or so and you miss a word.
Jeez, I'm glad I don't live in your neighbourhood. Look, my gripe is primarily about the fact that the bandwidth, which is the pipe that comes from the TV station to our house, is it's a finite quantity. It's about 40 mega bandwidth in a lot of respects. So now you can only get so much in there. Now, the thing that really amazes me is why the TV stations are trying to go multi-channeling, because each and every time you whack another channel in, you take, a bit more bandwidth, a bit more of that space is used up in the pipe coming to your house. And then they want to go and stick a high definition channel, which is like the equivalent of four standard def channels coming down. So you got to look at what their motivations are. Like, I would have thought, why don't you just have a high def and maybe one, all right, maybe two, but not four. Not four standard. It's going to stand like Foxtel very shortly on a free-to-air sort of channel. But anyway, come next year, watch out. If you haven't got a set-top box or a device which has a digital tuner in it, you will be missing out. In fact, let me let Adam tell you all about probably the best bet with his view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The digital lounge room is my office, both figuratively and literally, and it's going to be a busy place in 2008. The government has set an execution date for analog television broadcast, which is at the end of 2009 in the big cities. After that, if you don't have a television with a built-in digital tuner or a digital set-top box, all you'll see on television is an outside broadcast from Mount Buller during a snowstorm. Only a third of Australia's lounge rooms have made the move to digital, so more needs to be done to get the others to upgrade before the deadline. The free-to-air networks have botched the introduction of new programming on their high-definition digital channels, but as of January 2009, they'll be allowed to offer extra standard definition channels, which you'll only be able to see if you've gone digital. Under changes being considered by new Communications Minister Stephen Conroy, the government may allow TV networks to broadcast sporting events on these extra digital-only channels. The current anti-siphoning laws ensure free-to-air networks get first pick of the big sporting events, such as the AFL Grand Final or the Melbourne Cup, for their analogue channels. This is to ensure that Australians aren't forced to subscribe to pay TV to watch the big sporting moments. I guess you could consider it the couch potatoes Bill of Rights, but digital is set to shake this up. I say putting sport on digital-only channels in the metro area is a good idea, considering that in less than 2 years, metro viewers will be forced to go digital anyway. As with most technological transitions, most people will wait until the last minute and then demand the deadline for killing analogue be moved because they're not ready. Even though you can pick up a dirt cheap digital set-top box from the supermarket, most Australians haven't bothered because analogue still meets their needs. Football, cricket, tennis. Start moving these to digital-only channels now and people will sit up and take notice. Grab viewers by the balls and their hearts and minds will follow. The other big deal in the digital lounge room this year will be the battle of the high-definition personal video recorders. The Seven Network is set to unleash TiVo in Australia in time for the Beijing Olympics in August. Foxtel is also releasing its high-definition PVR, the iQ2, mid-year, along with the launch of four high-def channels. Both devices let you record multiple high-definition channels at the same time, putting your old VCR to shame. Again, it will be sport that helps push these technologies into Australia's lounge room. 10 is screening the AFL in high definition, as is 7 with the Olympics. 9 screened its first high-def cricket game over the summer, the Melbourne 2020 game against India, and it looked fantastic on my big 46-inch television. Foxtel is also offering two high-def sports channels, with local HD content including AFL, NRL, Super 14s and A-League. It's going to be a year when too much high-def sport is barely enough. The view from the couch will be sharper than ever.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, the view from the couch may be a little bit more sharp, but I don't know whether sport's everyone's cup of tea. So I agree with Adam wholeheartedly in getting sport onto free-to-air digital channels outside of that. But yep. There's a lot of other scope that the digital channels do offer. They don't necessarily have to conform to our traditional viewing habits either, I don't think.
Well, that's part of the advantage of it, I suppose, is that they can offer maybe some of the more, less popular but quality shows or something like that, and maybe find a niche market or two that currently doesn't get a run on the four or five channels.
I think it's also going to be interesting in respect to what we're going to see on those channels from a content point of view, because you look at, do they want to become another channel all of their own, sort of not unlike what ABC2 is. ABC2 is on air at the moment, which is the ABC's digital only second channel.
Yeah.
And the content there is fantastic, but normally it's a delayed repeat of something like Late Line or one of their current affairs programs.
Yeah, but that's one of the good things about ABC2 is that you get to see the Late Line and you get to see the...
I love it. I think it's terrific. And that's my point, because it's a delayed rebroadcast of something. Because a number of times you hear someone say, oh, did you see this on the 7:30 report or something like that? Then you can go back and watch it the next day. By the way, did you know the 7:30 report's on at 7:30 in the morning on ABC2?
I didn't know that.
That's very cool.
Did you know that? That's very clever.
Really cool.
See, it's not just that. I mean, it's, Speaks and Specs and all those other shows that, maybe you might miss it when it's on and it's rerun a couple of days later on ABC2. It's really handy.
So that's how they tend to use their channel. And also, it's great for the kids stuff, as I think JD was alluding to earlier.
24-hour kids TV. Fantastic.
It's not 24 hours, not quite. But it's during the nighttime, sort of when all the adult stuff's on ABC1, as they now call it. On ABC2, it's a little bit more kiddish. They can sit down and watch that sort of stuff. So I think they've thought about it and it works.
So again, that's targeting the niche market.
Absolutely. But you look at it on the commercial point of view, what are they going to do? Are we going to have different channels with like their own standalone channels tonight on channel 72 or something, 73 or something? Are they going to be like standalone channels, or are they going to use it to complement what they've got on their channel one or their first channel, their primary channel? Because like they can split what they broadcast on high def compared to what they have on their standard def channel.
Yep.
But say, for example, the cricket or a sporting event, could be anything. It runs over time, as sporting events do, and runs into the news. So on whatever channel one, you can cut to the allocated program time. But for all of us diehard petrol heads or tennis heads or cricket heads, you just go to channel 72 or 92 or whatever it is like that and watch it there. So I guess they've got to work out how they're going to use it.
Yeah. That's
they could do the director's cut and the commentaries on the second channel.
Well, I'll tell you what, the tennis this year was so boring. I reckon they should have had, channel 7 should have had Roy and HG on channel
on another 70, channel 70
commentary. Now, wouldn't that been fantastic?
Well, that sort of stuff can work, of course, on
absolutely.
Digital.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you get bored with the tennis players who know the tennis commentators who are just like, you know, robots. Mm. Why not have the Roy and HG thing on? I don't know, but that's just the example.
Yeah, or they could put on
work.
A complete contrast on one of the other channels. They could have
a movie.
They could have They could have a movie on the alternative channel for someone who's not into the sport, or they could have maybe the regular programs that have been usurped by the sporting event taken over that regular program's night. They could put on a special on the alternative channel.
Why don't you get rid of those complaints about you've taken, you know, my favourite show off the TV just so I can watch the cricket?
Exactly right. Yeah.
What about Star Trek? Do you think there's a home for Star Trek?
I was thinking that before, but I wasn't going to say
on a regular hourly basis.
But that might be one of those niche markets, like they might find that, you know, on
sci-fi channel.
Well, but maybe a sci-fi segment while some sporting events on. You know, they might put sci-fi programming on one of the other channels. You know, because they're catering to completely different markets.
Just as long as the vision doesn't move, like it's not a quick pan or something like that, because then it'll just pixelate and fall apart.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a problem. Yeah, so I mean, even as you've suggested on ABC 2, it can look a little bit like a dodgy download off the internet with blocks in the background.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. It's also interesting too that yes, if you look at a picture such as take the cricket or the tennis, where you've got lots of little heads in the background in the audience,
yep,
that takes up a lot of bandwidth for the broadcaster to actually get all that information out there. So as it pans across, you know, you do a left pan or the footy goes up the ground or something like that, it requires a lot of bandwidth so that that
that's
image
right,
doesn't
to update
fall
all
apart.
That fine detail. Yeah, that's right.
So if you go home now, it's a bit like looking for the cinch other little circles in the old movies where you used to, until you were pointed out to them, you never used to know them.
Yeah, the easiest
you're
going to
see it now. Yeah. You go, oh, look at that, it falls apart. And it does.
Yeah. One of the other places you see it is in an entertainment show, a movie or something, where they've got a dark background and you can see the shades of black in the background. You can see with definite edges, and then there's another different shade of black and an edge and another shade of black in what should be a continuous black background.
Bit of a halo.
Yeah. Very distracting to watch once you notice it.
I was watching a cooking show on the ABC the other night on ABC 2, which was really good.
Oh, yes. And you get that effect in the clouds of steam.
Yes, and they went for a bit of a walk through a bushy parkland, a lot of sticks and leaves and stuff. Beautiful pictures, but we couldn't see it.
Fair enough.
So, yes, digital TV is fraught with all sorts of interesting dilemmas for the new frontier.
Balancing acts all over the place that the networks are going to have to deal with.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop and Andrew McComb here tonight. When we come back, I'm going to take a bit of a look at some patches. Apparently there's a lot of patching going on at the moment in both camps.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a sensitive fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open things with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft are offering a standalone version of Outlook for people that want to use said program, which is interesting because you used to get bundled on your Windows box Outlook Express, the cut-down version.
That's right. But Outlook Express has no spam filtering. It has no spell checking. It has no calendar facility. It has a fairly basic address book instead of a contact list.
Cut down is a really not really the right
Nothing
word.
Like it's really
the amputated version.
Yeah.
Keep going. Is there anything else it hasn't got?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Like,
can you have multiple email accounts in it or something?
You can.
Oh, that's something. That's something. Anyway, Microsoft has launched a new version of Outlook targeted towards small businesses, which will be sold separately from Office. The email application will be combined with a contact management tool and branded Office Outlook 2007 with Business Contact Manager, strangely enough. Small business owners need effective solutions for managing their customer database, apparently, so this is the reason why Microsoft has come out and done this. Many small and home-based businesses keep their contacts in several different places. I know someone in my family who does. There you go, $149 US if you just want to buy it, but maybe worth going and spending a bit more and getting the actual
Office
suite.
Yeah, I would have thought that most businesses are going to buy Office, and of course Outlook comes with every version of Office.
It does. And Small Business Server too.
Small Business Server forces that
because that's how it talks to Exchange Server.
Which is part of Small Business Server, yeah. That's right.
Anyway, all right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We better take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Not long to go now. Tech Talk Radio on the airwaves on a radio station near you. Hello to everyone listening on a free-to-air service, and hello to everyone listening to us on the pod, wherever you might happen to be. Whether you're in Chicago, hello to everyone over at Stop and Go Radio. That's on the other side of the planet, and not to mention all of our expats that seem to listen to us from near and far. You can send us an email, jump on the forum, make sure you subscribe to our newsletter, because that's a good thing that we're doing these days. Nice, keep you up to date, click some links, a bit of news early in the piece, all sorts of things there. So visit the website, techtalkradio.com.au. And follow your nose, like a lot of people have been doing lately, so which is good. And hello to our new subscribers. There have been a few new subscribers in this week too, which is very good. I won't name them on air because they may not want me to, but I'll be picking a few listeners up from ABC Radio, which is very handy. So
very good.
Welcome aboard all of our ABC listeners at the moment. So, yes. All right, let's... in the break, we were talking about something which I said to JD. I said, we should talk about that on air. Apple and their iPhone. You're saying you can now actually... What's the deal with an iPhone in Australia?
Well, if you want to import one, they're fairly expensive still. I'm still waiting for the next G version that'll come out, we're told, about March, so not long to
March.
To right now.
Do you know who the carrier's going to be?
No idea. In fact, I'm not even sure that March is real anymore, but because it's only next month. However, the issue with the iPhone, for those of you who haven't been keeping up, is that you need to unlock it in order to use it outside of the US.
Bit of soldering iron work involved and
well,
things
soldering
like
iron. There was another option, which was to use one of these SIM encoders, so it makes the iPhone think it's talking to the US network, but in fact it's actually talking to Optus or Telstra or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But with the latest version of the firmware, 1.1.3, that stopped working. But GeoHot, or at least that's his screen name, has come up with an unlock process for that now. So virtually every model iPhone now and version of firmware can be used without the SIM converter. So with the natural SIM, the way it's meant to be for your carrier, on your local network. So you can do MMS, SMS, phones. It won't do the visual voicemail thing, which was Apple's big selling feature, because that's a network-specific option which isn't available in Australia.
Here's a question. It may not be directed to the right person because it's a telephony-related question. The 3G SIMs are different to the 2.5G SIMs in respect to their USIM or something like that, and you can't normally swap them over. Can you put a 3G SIM into an iPhone? Does it work?
I would imagine it would. I mean, I've got a 3G SIM in my 2.5G phone now. So.
Okay, good. So it does work. Because I think they're different voltages too. Where's Mark when you need him?
I think it depends on the model of phone.
Does it?
Mm.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Might think about getting an iPhone 1 year. When they roll out 4G or something like that. No, but they're a very nice thing. The pinch and flick and all that sort of stuff. Which also is now available
on the new MacBook Air.
Mm. Yeah, I saw that the other day. I thought, oh, that's got to be good. And, you know, just the ability to, if you know, when you shoot your digital camera and it's portrait as opposed to landscape, or is it the other way around? Landscape.
Yeah.
Long ways is what I'm trying to say. And you can just get your fingers, says he doing this in the studio, and just turn it on the ThinkPad.
But on my digital camera, it's got a sensor in it. So when you rotate the camera, it rotates the image on the screen for you.
Ooh, mine doesn't do that.
Ooh, freaky. That's good. Let's talk about Next G advocates. Telstra staff have already visited the homes of hundreds of CDMA customers. It wants to help migrate to its Next G network. They're doing a door knock. How about that?
Good on them.
That's not bad for a phone company, is it?
It's actually coming out to see the customer.
Oh, yes, yeah, service.
Knock, knock on the door.
Can I tell you, though, that I actually tried to ring the phone company tonight at 6:50 or something?
Yeah.
And they're all gone. This is Telstra. Sorry, the office is running between
no one to answer the phone at Telstra.
8 and 6. We're not in at the moment. Can you leave a message and we'll call you back in the morning? We'll send someone around and knock on your door.
Hmm.
So, oh, dear. Laugh. We did. All right, mobile phone usage to overtake landline usage, what I was talking about earlier, Graham.
Yeah.
Mobile voice calls will exceed those on fixed networks in Western Europe by the middle of 2008, apparently. The latest telecoms...
I'm surprised it doesn't already, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, apparently all the research is showing that the proportion of call minutes made from mobiles has increased by 1.4% each year. Each quarter over the past year. So we're getting more and more volume. This is obviously in Europe. In the UK, where patterns of consumers are close to the European average, mobile voice usage should overtake fixed voice in the second quarter of 2008, and which has already happened in France, apparently. But you take a look at Australia, and I would have to say that let's ditch the fixed line. I think everybody wants to, but they can't because of DSL.
Do you make calls on your mobile phone when you're home?
Yes. I don't use the home phone. The only reason why I have a home phone is because of the internet. I need a DSL, but as soon as Naked comes along,
so if you've got your mobile phone in your pocket and the home phone's right beside you, you'd still use a mobile.
Absolutely.
All your phone numbers are in it. It's too easy.
Yeah, and do you find that too, that it's absolutely rude when someone rings you on a home phone these days?
Because you tend to think, what on earth is going on? Yeah.
Who's ringing me on that number? Oh, that'll be for my wife, and you leave it go and whatever. The telemarketer or something.
Yeah, telemarketers ring on the home phone.
And don't answer,
Mm. mobiles don't cause cancer. This is back in the news again. Mobile phone.
No joke. Yep.
This was in Australian IT. Mobile phones, deodorants, and coffee are extremely unlikely to cause cancer. Well, that's good. I'm happy about the coffee.
Mm.
According to a new risk report designed to combat urban myths about what causes the diseases.
Any new technology is going to have a fear factor associated with it, and sometimes it's justified and sometimes it's not.
And, of course, the big news, which has fallen off the radar last week, Microsoft and Yahoo. makes a bit of a tremble, but it's raised some interesting issues in this country.
Certainly has.
Respect to our broadcasters, because 9MSN, which is the Microsoft version, and 7Yahoo.
Yeah, so 9
Conflict
and 7.
Conflict of interest. What's the ACCC going to think about all this? We'll take a break, and when we come back, it'll be OddSpot Gadgets and the website of the week on Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
Listening.
In terms of the volume,
over a centimeter. Fingerprints.
Now, this.
We may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Ladies and gentlemen, for this segment, I'd like to introduce you to the virtual Dr. Ron.
Hi all, Dr. Ron here with this week's gadget. While we were off merrymaking over the summer series, I was given a do-it-yourself toy kit as a Kris Kringle present. It's the Mini Solar Spider Robot Kit, and it's an eight-legged mechanical creature that crawls almost anywhere, as long as its solar cell is pointing at direct sunlight. It's got what can best be described as a crab-like walking motion, and it takes about half an hour to assemble. Inside its small body is an electric motor, which is connected directly to a solar panel. It looks like something that NASA might use to explore the surface of Mars. All you need is a small Phillips head screwdriver to put the thing together. Batteries aren't included because batteries are not needed. You can buy these online for about $15. That's the Mini Solar Spider Robot Kit, this week's gadget on Tech Talk Radio.
Have you got one of these, Graham?
I haven't got one, but I've seen Dr. Ron's one. It's the most extraordinary looking machine. He's quite right when he says it looks like something that might explore Mars.
So what does it do?
It's just got a solar cell on it and a little motor, and the motor runs this incredibly intricate little series of gears that makes the legs move and it walks. Oh, and that's what cool. It does. That's all it does.
That's going to kill my son's volcano experiment, I think.
Oh, goodness me. All right, that was the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week. Thank you there to the virtual Dr. Ron.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
All right, this one, GIMP.org, and I'll get JD to tell us a bit about this, but apparently if you go to GIMP, says he, alt-tabbing, if you head off to ws.gimp.org, that's G-I-M-P.org, you'll find a lovely little program there, which is free to download. It's a powerful, full-featured photo editing program comparable to Photoshop, and it's available for Linux, Mac, and Windows. Now, you've been using it, have you, JD?
I have. It uses the X11 windowing system if you're running Linux or Mac OS X, and operates under Windows. It's a freeware alternative to Photoshop.
In fact, it's completely open source, so it's, GPL license. You can use it for anything, even commercially.
What's GPL mean?
It's a license. It's a way of licensing software so that you ensure that the source code is always available if someone wants to modify it. And it also means that that even if someone does modify it, that they provide the modifications back to the community. And it means it's totally free to use. You can use it. You can distribute it for free. Okay. You can give it away. You can sell it. You can use it, and it's part of in a commercial environment. You can do anything with it.
So GIMP's good, is it?
Pretty powerful. It's got layering in it. I used it to do some maps last year, quite extensively. So it's got layering. It does all the graphic effects you'd expect.
It's very, very powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to download it. There you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio, and that came from Lydia Davis too in Palo Alto. Thanks, Lyd, for that one. GIMP.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, as if we didn't have enough to worry about already, the US is warning that the cyber world and Second Life and such virtual worlds are becoming a dangerous area where terrorists might be operating.
The war on terror has gone to cyberspace now.
What started off as a benign environment where people would congregate to share information or explore fantasy worlds is now offering the opportunity for religious or political extremists to recruit, rehearse, transfer money, and ultimately engage in information warfare or worse with impunity. And the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, would you believe, IARPA, part of the US intelligence community, recommends setting up red teams of intelligence operatives who would investigate virtual worlds. So watch out for the red cyber spooks next time you log on to Second Life.
Next there'll be a television program.
They'll be keeping an eye on what you're doing and making sure you don't plan to blow up the ABC's island again.
Well, yes, that's right. Telstra's out there too. Watch out, Telstra. You'll get some operatives coming in there to stealthily destroy your virtual 3G network or something.
That's the idea, yep. So, yes, the US intelligence services, yep, paranoia reigns supreme.
All right, you have been listening to not Dr. Ron, but Dr. Graham. Thank you very much, Graham, this evening. Justin Dunlop has been in, and I'm Andrew McComb. Until next week, when on the show we have Senior Constable Susan McLean from Victoria Police returning to those Tech Talk studios live.
Fantastic.
To talk about...
She was really good last time she was on.
Yeah, cyberbullying, and hopefully we'll have a bit more of a surprise too, but can't say just yet, so you better make sure you tune in for next week. And that should be a really good program to listen to. So if you've got young kids online who surf at school, they get picked on via SMSs and stuff like that, you'll get some very handy hits.
Yeah.
And it'll be all modern because we haven't had her on for about 12 months or so. So it'll be fantastic. Looking forward to that one. And we might even get to see the virtual Dr. Ron at some stage next week. Which
we'll
who knows?
Make a nice change.
The real Dr. Ron.
The real Dr. Ron, yeah. All right, so that's it. Tech Talk Radio for this week. Same station, same podcast this time next week too. Make sure you're with us. Until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.